it's all well and good coming back to the gym, doing a strategy and a plan and going, right, cool, let's get straight into the next season. But like, ultimately, like, people need to rest. You need to like allow and plan for a period of down. So you've been like foot on the gas for so long and you've accumulated that stress. Like, these are kids at the end of the day. Like, they need to reconnect again with like coming into the gym without that level of stress. So if we start thinking about goals straight away and this is what we've got planned and this is what you're going to be doing and these are all the changes we're going to be making, we're actually not removing the stress, we're changing the stress.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Shift Show, where my number one goal is to bring you the tools, ideas, and the latest science to help you change gymnasts' lives. My name is Dave Tilley. Today on the podcast, I'm very excited to be bringing on one of the legendary guests that we've had on many, many podcasts, my good friend, wonderful mentor, and also a just fantastic coach and guy all around, to be honest. Nick Ruddick is back on the podcast because when this podcast comes out, we are approaching the off season in the kind of large training block for many, many people around the world. So there are many people here in the States who are getting close to the end of the season to plan their off season. Many people around the world are kind of on the precipice of that as well. And so it's around this time of the year that I get a lot of questions, emails, DMs from many different people across, you know, the club level, the college level, the elite level, the international level. And people always have some sort of questions on what should we do about our strength program? How should we plan our practices? How should we make sure that kids are recovering from maybe a hard season and are healthy? What should we do to improve on our basics or our drills? There's a lot of people who have these types of questions, and everyone's in a great kind of approach of self-reflection. They want to think about what went wrong or not as great in the season. What are they going to improve? What are they going to fix? And it's very great that they are having these questions. So I'm usually very busy these 2 months of the year doing consulting work, kind of getting together and traveling for speaking, but also in the off season doing consulting work with different programs. And so this year, I wanted to get a little bit ahead of the curve, and I wanted to try my best to put together a lot of content that is going to help people with these problems way before the summer starts or the off season starts. Because the problem is, people have these things, they want to go to Con Ed places, they want to go to congresses, but they get to the congress, it's halfway through the summer, and they kind of put some drills in, it's tough, right? So what I've done here is we have Nick on today. We are sharing on some of our most important tips for people in the off season. What should you be doing? How should you think about strength? What should you do to think about your goals and structure things? Talking to people on the team. But then also what I've gone ahead and I've done, and I've taken three different lectures and I've put them in the Hero Lab for people that are existing members. The Hero Lab is our kind of monthly membership model where we put all sorts of Con Ed education stuff. And there's like 60 lectures in there for gymnastics stuff. There's a whole bunch of different resources, PDFs, circuits, drills, whatever you want to find in there. But I put three new ones in there. So one of which is going to be a strength and conditioning lecture on how to train for the off season with what types of exercises, what drills, what shaping. Another one is planning your entire season. So how do you make sure the off season is structured well? And what are you going to do in there for blocks of the season? How should you focus on strength or basics or skills? When should you change into routine mode? Because I get that question a lot. And the third one is a kind of debrief lecture. So what do you do at the end of the season to reflect back and talk to the coaches, the kids, the parents? How do you change your practice schedules? How do you change your planning? How do you make sure you're getting the most out of off season or summer practices to set yourself up really well for the fall and the kind of upcoming season? So one in-depth one on gymnastic strength training, one in-depth one on season planning, and one in-depth one on kind of year in review. And all of those are now inside the Hero Lab when this goes up, and we're offering 25% off everything that Shift has to offer. So we have the Gymnastics Culture Cure book, was very popular. People are using that quite a bit. The lectures for the Hero Lab, we have a bunch of strength and conditioning courses, a bunch of flexibility courses, a bunch of other things that we've done from past symposiums, many, many things in there. And I wanted to just give everybody access to, you know, some more content that if they want to dive in and check out some stuff. So everything on the store is 25% off if you just use these code SUMMER25. So SUMMER25, because here in the States, it's going to be the summer for the off season. But you can get anything you've possibly wanted to, you know, get your off season going well, whether that's drills and skills and stuff in the symposium, or whether that's going to be a flexibility or strength program, whether that's these new lectures in the Hero Lab, which is a pretty great value there. It's all inside there. And so I wanted to do this podcast with Nick to get him on to share that, but also just to announce to everybody else that that is live for the week that this episode is going up. So I hope you have a wonderful episode experience listening to this, taking home some knowledge from Nick and myself. I hope you dive into some of those lectures that are on discount this week, and I hope you have a fantastic off-season training. I'm sure I'll see many people out in the wild as we travel and start to get going. So hope you enjoy this episode with Nick. All right, we're live. We're back in action after a little break. Nick, my friend, as of course, whenever I want to do a podcast, you're the only one who I want to start talking to. So I'm just kidding. What's up?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, man. I think this makes your 10th, 12th, 15th, 20th podcast, you know, something up in that range. But no, man, it's things are good. Things are very good. I think we have we've struck the balance on the podcast and with Shift of delivering really great information, but also not being at a relentless pace every day, every week. That is the summary of my last 6 months of working with Shift. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. I've been like things have been pretty intense over here, to be honest with you. A lot of
GymCon just wrapped up. Not the time to get the answer, but
yeah, a lot of projects, a lot of progress, which is great. Some restructuring. Yeah, you know, things have got to continue to evolve, right? Otherwise, life gets stale and business gets stale as well. So always looking for new opportunities, which is my downfall as well. But yeah, it's been a good few months. Yeah, made some big changes and enjoying life, which is nice.
Nice, man. I'm happy to hear that. Yeah, I feel that too. Sometimes it's hard to not, as soon as you finish or get close to finishing one thing, like, all right, what's next? You know, it's good sometimes to just like sit down and just let it all sink in. But did I see, I think your Instagram, you were over in Canada with Ellie and that crew?
Yes. I'm working pretty closely with them at the minute, which is great. So I've done a couple of trips to Canada this week, this year, I should say, already. I've got at least three more planned. So just really enjoying that kind of collaboration and relationship with Ellie, Danelle, some other athletes that are kind of flying in to work with us. And obviously just collaborating with Dave Kikuchi, who I'm sure you're familiar with. I think you've had on the podcast as well. So yeah, it's been fun. It's been really fun.
Yep. Yeah, I've never met them in person, but I'm sure you can confirm that Ellie and Dave and Scott are just as wonderful in person as I've ever had them in the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely confirm that. Great people. They are absolutely true to themselves. What you see on the podcast or in media is exactly who they are. And I just really enjoy spending time with them. They're you know, not only great people, they're very great performers. They're great at what they do, each in their own kind of respective right. So you've got someone like Scott with tremendous expertise, of course, in strength and conditioning that I can just learn a lot from. You know, Ellie, amazing athlete, amazing human being. And again, you know, I can learn so much from that. And Dave Kikuchi also is, you know, Ellie's personal coach, just a tremendous guy with a really refreshing mindset and attitude towards coaching. And yeah, I consider him a great friend and a great colleague as well. So just a massive fan of spending my time with those people. And obviously I'm able to contribute as well to kind of what they're doing. And yeah, it's been fun. So yeah, looking forward to continuing that throughout the rest of the year.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I'm so happy. Nothing is cooler than when you see like friends and connections all like kind of like overlap. You know, I used to joke, it's like when your university friends meet your high school friends for the first time and you're like, wow, this is great. This is like all my favorite people in the same room. So I'm sure it's the same. You guys must have a blast.
Yeah, and there's other benefits in there, like Tim Hortons. Gotta love it.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, yeah.
Chocolate dip donut. I mean, that's great. Ellie knows all the best food spots in Halifax, so that's a bonus as well. Sure. So, they're nice balanced trips. Yeah,
that's great, man. I'm so happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear that everyone's doing well. That's always great to hear that they're all still cooking up there for obviously part of the quad right now. Actually, it's ironic that we were talking about that is the segue for me was that I was getting to the point in the year here where things are getting pretty busy with postseason championships. So here for the club programs, states, regionals, nationals, you know, we're approaching Olympic trials, not to date the episode, but I'm not sure if you have this as well, but usually in the 3 months of the season where we're just about to end one and just about to start the next, the number of DMs messages kind of gets ramped up around certain prep issues and stuff like that. So that's where it came to mind for me was that like, I'm like, all right, this is like a time of the year where people want more information. They seem to need some help with some common questions. And I was hoping to talk to you about like some ways people could best prepare for the off season, whether it's, you know, here or coming in a few months, a different part of the world to then have the best next season. Right. That's kind of where my head was going to. So I'm not sure if you have thoughts on that too, if you get a similar influx of people kind of interested or if it's just my DMs.
Well, you're more popular than me, Dave. So you probably get more DMs in general.
Not what I was setting up, not at all.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is a topic that I am asked about, whether it's within my sort of membership community, probably more so there than anywhere else. But yeah, it's interesting because I think coaches move to a state of reflection, don't they? When one season closes, they're immediately, as coaches, we tend to just look forward straight away to what's going to happen next. And that's probably, again, the kind of one of the superpowers of what we do, which is like we're always on because we're always thinking about like, where's the opportunity? How can I improve? That's also one of our downfalls as well, because we're always on. I think I'll come on to that in a bit. But yeah, it's a common thread and a common discussion point. But it's nice that coaches are thinking about it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, unfortunately or fortunately, you know, you see a common theme in kind of how people present that is usually many people have like high moments of the season, things go well, but oftentimes their reflection is sometimes sparked by things that don't go super well. And that's what I get a lot of here. So particularly with my work here, like the college and university level, is I oftentimes will get a team or a group that reaches out and wants to consult because they're like, hey, you know, like we were really frustrated with blank, you know, scores, with our cardio wasn't great on floor, our injuries were too much, we couldn't get a full squad ready for the last, you know, couple weeks of the season or something. They're coming to you with things that are frustrating and are very context specific, whether it's form, injuries, whatever. But in my opinion, from the years of doing this, thankfully, is I actually find the system for how in which you go about and solve those problems is pretty universal in terms of what you should do, what steps you should take in the off season are pretty you know, set in terms of like how should you go about that. So maybe one person's problem is injury, one person's problem was floor cardio, one person's was, you know, form deduction or artistry. The system in which you use to kind of dissect that and improve upon it, I think, is pretty universal. And that's kind of what I want to talk about, is share some of the things that you and I maybe see commonly program to program, that like this is what you should be doing to make the best of that situation and improve on the next one. Does that sound good?
It sounds great. Yeah. And I think, you know, when we're having those conversations, I just see it as a really positive thing, because there's nothing worse than the opposite, which is, you know, injuries happening, performances being bad, friction in the coaching team, whatever that might be. And actually people just continuing as normal and not going through the process of actually like, what opportunities are there for us to learn here? Where can we actually improve? What lessons can we take from last season and movement to the next season as well? So whenever those questions are being raised, that for me is like a green flag. It's like there's obviously a group of people that are actually wanting to push things on and evolve. And there's nothing worse than just kind of regurgitating the same program and getting the same results. And one of my favorite quotes, I'm pretty sure I've said this 7 times on your podcast before, but 10 years of coaching without reflection is 1 year of coaching repeated 10 times. And like, we just see that so often, you know, you just see coaches doing the same thing every single season, every year, getting the same results. And that can only come from either a lack of reflection or a lack of action. Because you can reflect and you can draw out all the lessons and you can strategize, but ultimately you've got to put that into place and you've actually got to deliver on it. So I find, you know, reflection and action together are absolutely critical.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great quote. And I think the combination is important. I think, and with that, in tandem, I see is people get to that point of maybe like a pain point where it's like frustration or something goes wrong, and they really get excited and they like inhale like a ridiculous amount of information and knowledge in maybe a week or so when the season is winding down or they have a break. And they go to Congress, they take a lecture, take whatever. And then unfortunately, they get so overwhelmed and they feel as though they're the only person who's trying to make positive change in their gym that maybe other people are not really open to it or not doing it with them. And then they just kind of go back slowly to what they were doing. They go back to the same drills. They go back to the same conditioning. They just continue to kind of live in their own little echo chamber. They don't reach out to people. And then they find themselves back in the same kind of uphill stream by the end of the off season. And then season's right around the corner, got to start routines. And they really didn't make any progress. You know, that's what I see, unfortunately, commonly sometimes is people get really excited. They get really fired up. They kind of like warrior charge in solo into continuing education and then just like slowly slide back downhill. And so I'm not sure if you also see that kind of as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think, again, as coaches, we do these things in phases quite often, don't we? We move from one subject to the next. And you're right. If the athletes aren't, or the coaching team, like aren't ready for it, sometimes we can almost implement too many things at once and we've got the right intent. You know, and this happened at the weekend. I obviously delivered a conference online, and one of the questions I got was, you know, would you recommend that we implement all of this work and all of these templates straight away? And I was like, well, actually, it's a really great question, because the answer to that is probably no. You've got to start to like introduce this slowly, get buy-in from the team, help other people understand, because if you're the change maker or you're the one bringing the interventions, then you've got the motive. You're like, I've just learned this and I've got this idea, but other people don't have that energy behind it. They don't even understand exactly what you're trying to achieve. You're just throwing things at them. So yeah, change should always be gradual either way, whether it's ramping up or slowing down. Like, change has got to be made gradually, I think.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think I think the best way to kind of go about this is we both brainstormed maybe three things that we would like to kind of offer to people and maybe things to start with now, because again, time sensitive, but it's important. It's like April here in the States, and it means that we have about another month of season before things wrap up. And then from there it's May, you know, and that's kind of where things really start to get off to the races. So the first point that I want to offer that I think I'm finding myself as like the mediator, maybe like the counselor of sometimes in group settings, is having like a very large coaching staff and then coach to athlete and coach to parent, like season debrief about like the good, the bad, and the ugly. I think sometimes people are reluctant, like you said, to maybe dig into things that didn't go well, because it gets into like a little bit of sensitive, you know. If you do it the wrong way, it looks like you're playing a witch hunt. You're pointing fingers at people. Well, you didn't do this. This score was lower, or like these parents didn't do this. And I feel like that's like the number one way to start off on a really toxic foot in your gym is to start pointing fingers at everyone. But instead, if you make it a regular system of like, okay, every season after the last meet is done, we're going to have a week where we're going to let everyone just go do their own thing, be a kid, go on vacation, you know, come back, get yourself together. But that first day back, you know, maybe there's a lighter practice or not practice, but we're going to have a 2-hour, you know, debrief, and we're going to talk about, you know, what things went really well we were proud of, what things didn't go really well that we were maybe frustrated with, you know, and how can we all just kind of move the ship in the right direction towards the biggest one or two or three things to focus on. And I find that personally, you have to do that in a group setting first, where everyone can kind of just air it out, get some coffee for everyone, you know, pay for their time if you're a coaching staff. And then individually, it's good to set up meetings with 20 minutes with this coach, 20 minutes with this coach, and just to kind of get on a personal level, because sometimes people are nervous to speak up if they're not, you know, an open personality. So I think a combination of a group setting debrief and then individual one-on-one meetings, we would take 2 full days at the last gym that I worked at. And we would do that with every coach and with every athlete to really understand them at a granular level, and then collect all that feedback and be like, all right, like now what can we do next? You know, so that I think is the most important thing, is it's almost worth maybe a week of your time to go through all those individually. You know, that's my personal opinion, but you obviously work with a lot of teams, you consult with a lot of people. So what's your approach to that?
It's not too dissimilar, to be honest, Dave. I think, you know, I'm a big believer in making that time. You know, some people would see that as a loss of time. It sounds like you and I both agree that that is an investment of time in which you're going to get back probably more purposeful practice following that kind of discussion. I do believe that it's important to structure those. So it's almost like you've got a recurring agenda for those meetings, which would happen after every single competition or season. And what that allows is an element of consistency, and people would understand, like, we've got a process behind this. So we do the competition, and then, you know, 2 days, 3 days later, whatever that is, you know, these are the questions that we ask ourselves. And if people can get into that pattern, I think it helps to smoothen the process for people that, you know, particularly, well, I guess what I'm trying to say here is that some people see these things, you know, they get quite anxious about it. And like we want to normalize those discussions. So I think the more you can structure it so you've got consistency, the better. So having the same questions which get answered, you know, obviously it's got to be delivered on a bed of psychological safety, you know, mutual trust, you know, all of that's a given. But then that normalization and that familiarity with those conversations, I think, is quite powerful. So yeah, I do believe in everything that you've just said there. Now, depending on the level of performance, of course, and the how high the stakes are, will depend on how formalized or how detailed those meetings need to be. I mean, like some athletes and coaches or teams, you just don't need to be going into like horrendous amounts of information. But if you're working at international level, you know, those debriefs are super, super important, and they will be more granular. You will be looking at, you know, every single 1% opportunity. You'll be comparing scores, of course, from what you might have achieved over that period to other teams as well. You'll be digging into opportunities. The score data is analyzed a lot more intensely. But you just don't necessarily need to be doing that at that level for your younger development kids that are just doing a few hours a week, of course. You know, we don't want to go overkill on this.
Yep. No, I agree. And I think the thing you mentioned that is really important, I think I want to highlight too, is that it has to be built on the bedrock of trust and communication and psychological safety. Because, you know, I think we've all been a part of debriefs or meetings where, you know, you're a little tense, not, I want to say super tense, but like, you know, it's a meeting about something that didn't go well. And so if somebody offers a solution or says something out of the world, and like, you can feel like this, like kind of like side eye tension, like this kind of gossipy nature to like bickering a bit. And it's like, clearly you guys aren't based on like a, this kind of aspect of like, we're all working together to raise the bar and try to make everybody happier at work and kind of make the kids happier too as well. And so if that's not first, you know, you need to really set that in stone. And I can just speak from example of obviously not saying the teams, but like I'll have a meeting with a Zoom call or I'll go to a university and it will be the head coach, the two assistant coaches, the volunteer coach, the strength coach, the physical therapist, and the medical staff, right? Or another like doctor or something like that. And the nine of us will sit around here and talk about, you know, reflecting back on the season of what went well. And I can promise you that the teams that are like making the best of the time and are just the ones that are really just crushing it year after year after year, that conversation is open. No one's fault. We're not pointing fingers. We're just trying to all figure out what needs to be done to get things to move forward, you know? And the other thing I think I want to highlight on this before we move on is once you find out what you want to work on, you have to very quickly say, am I capable? Do I have the knowledge base to do this myself or do I need help? And so in those programs, those university programs, they have a strength coach and a PT and AT, mental health, nutrition. But they are constantly working in that circle and being like, okay, this is outside my scope of expertise. I need to ask somebody to help me, or maybe I'm really good at, you know, strength conditioning and I can figure this out myself. So those are my two parting thoughts is don't be afraid to have those conversations and make it open and honest, but also be very open about your edge of your knowledge levels.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got just probably two things I'd like to add if you don't mind. The first one is the importance of the proactivity in those discussions. So whenever a meeting is scheduled reactively, you know, immediately people's kind of safety siren starts kind of screaming at them. They're like, what are we meeting about? What's gone wrong? And, you know, am I going to get into trouble? And that's going against the culture, which we want to encourage, which as we've discussed is one of safety and collaboration. It's when we can challenge each other and discuss things without there being, you know, fear of repercussions. So, you know, ideally when people are looking at their competition schedules, whether that's for, you know, next season, like actually schedule in these meetings now rather than waiting for something to happen before going, we need a meeting. And that way people again understand that, okay, this is great. We've got like a pre-competition discussion and that might take place a month before and then maybe another one a week before. That's in the diary, locked in. And then we've got the actual event itself. We've got a cooling off period. So like never do this the day after. Have a few days to cool off. And that means cool off from success as well as failure. And then have your proactive meeting afterwards. And then that framework can just be replicated throughout the year. And I think that cooling off period is important because like ultimately competition is emotional. When you have great success, you ride the high of the emotion of that and you start to feel invincible and you start to pat yourself on the back and think like everything was great and I told you we could do this and our plan was perfect. Let's just do it again. But that's not reality. That's actually not the way that things work. And then when we fail, when we make mistakes in competition, we can be emotional as well. Like, oh, I'm terrible. I messed the plan up. Nothing went right. I'm quitting my job. And it's like, and that's not right either. Yeah, but that's normal. Like we react as like, because we're so invested in the performances and results, right? So having either parent conversations or like serious athlete meetings or these coaching discussions, like I do believe that there needs to be a planned delay between the event taking place and then the formality of the discussions. And like on that note, I've just got a principle or a policy behind that, that, you know, I'm just not going to have coaching discussions with parents like at the competition itself. So there's got to be that allowance for time. Now, the final thing I wanted to mention was about the importance of recognizing where success has come from, because success leaves clues, right? And so these meetings shouldn't be just seen as like, what's gone wrong? Like, where are the gaps? You know, where are the opportunities? That stuff's great, but we need to learn from, well, what did we do really well throughout this process too? What have we done which has been successful that we need to make sure we continue to do throughout the next season as well? And that is equally as important. So we can learn a lot from success and a lot from failure. We don't want to disregard either.
Yeah, I love it. Very well said. And I couldn't agree more of the physical and the time interval distance between these conversations. Like you should, I personally find that going to a neutral coffee shop or somewhere sitting down and having those conversations is way better than in the gym, in the office. Like it's just better for everybody. So, all right, belabored that point pretty well. So what is your first tip for people that you have?
Okay. My first tip would be about allowing a period of like recovery and not just a physical recovery, which, you know, is very, very important, but a mental one too. And so as we're in competition season and, you know, particularly towards the very end of it, you know, we can imagine that the intensity of training has ramped up. The demand on us psychologically, or the athlete psychologically, is high. There's a level of stress involved with that process. You know, it's all well and good coming back to the gym, doing a strategy and a plan and going, right, cool, let's get straight into the next season. But like, ultimately, like, people need to rest. You need to like allow and plan for a period of down. So you've been like foot on the gas for so long and you've accumulated that stress. Like, these are kids at the end of the day. Like, they need to reconnect again with like coming into the gym without that level of stress. So if we start thinking about goals straight away and this is what we've got planned and this is what you're going to be doing and these are all the changes we're going to be making, we're actually not removing the stress, we're changing the stress. The stress is no longer about like, you've got to deliver this routine next week for the competition, don't mess it up. The stress is now, well, you've got these goals that you need to achieve by this deadline in order to be ready for the next competition. And I just don't think that's healthy for the children. And actually, I don't think it's healthy for us as coaches either. So allowing the athletes to come into the gym and just to like really reconnect with like the fun part of the sport. So playing with skills, exploring new skills, being creative, like not having that pressurized training. I think that's tremendously important. And that's going to prevent burnout from both athlete and coach, because the predictability of training in a competition season, like, it wears off. And, you know, I said about the importance of reconnecting with the sport and the passion. Now, that's not to say that competitive season is horrible, but actually, like, let's be real about this. There's a lot of athletes that don't particularly find that process like super fun. They're not like, yeah, I can't wait to go in the gym today and like do 8 routines on beam. Like, there's not many athletes that will feed off that. What they're looking forward to is like the result, that like they fixate on the outcome quite a lot of the time, I think, when it comes to competitive season. Like, I'm doing this because of the outcome that I want. And like, let's not lose sight of like, we want the athlete to walk into the gym excited for training and just ready for the unpredictability and the playfulness and the creativity that the sport can offer them. And I think that's really, really powerful. Now, that could be a game. It could be team sports and activities with them. It could be a little bit more autonomy and training, so a bit more freedom to explore. It could be just experimenting and playing with like new skills that you're not actually taking that seriously. So I just think that that period is really important. Now, for some people, that period might just look like 2 weeks. And it doesn't need to look like any more than that. Like, 2 weeks might be 10 training sessions. For some, it could be a little bit longer. You know, it all depends on the competition structure. But, you know, there might be listeners thinking, well, we don't have time to do that. You've got to make time, and you've got to make sure that that stuff gets into your training. So like, you might not go from one extreme to the other of like highly structured to no structure, because the pendulum would swing too much. Maybe you just find that balance point where you're staying on top of foundations, you're still bringing the intensity down, but you're also exploring and having loads of fun. Like, that's what this is all about. So like, is training fun enough? That's got to be a key question that we're asking ourselves. And that's my first suggestion there.
Yeah, no, I think it's fantastic. And I couldn't agree more. I think this speaks to a lot of things. One is in which, you have to be willing to communicate early about that period's going to come, and it's going to be, you know, a very important part of training. And the second piece to it is, you have to, as a coach, as a parent, maybe even as an athlete too, if you're older, is you have to like understand why that's so valuable and why that's so important. Because I don't know, the States is famous for this, but gymnastics as a whole is like, you just get in this hamster wheel of success where like, you just constantly need to be running towards the next thing. And I feel like when everyone sprints on a hamster wheel to nowhere, everyone just kind of falls apart, and we lose the, like you said, the enjoyment and the reason why we're doing it. I can tell you that as someone who is very busy in this time of the year with everyone getting ready for States, regionals, nationals, end of the year show, whatever, there's not a single person that I work with that's like, I feel great. I feel awesome. Nothing hurts. I'm mentally fresh, ready to go. Like, everyone is kind of like just trying to get by and get through the end of the season. Cause it's hard, man. It's really hard emotionally and physically on your body, even if you have a wonderful gym and culture and pressure. So I will personally say that I recommend everyone takes a full week off, if not 2 weeks off, if they're younger in particular, because they just really need to give themselves a break. And then a full week, like what you said, of like, get in the gym, play, do skills that you want to enjoy, just have fun, just relax a bit, keep it loose, more open gym structure with some like conditioning and stuff can still be a little bit more, you know, maintenance care type stuff. But if you plan these things early and you get ahead of the ball, so say you end in the middle of May for our competition season, you could take 2 full weeks off and then have a week of play and you still have 3.5 months before a routine start. It's like, you got plenty of time, right? So if you don't plan for these things though, you don't really ever give the opportunity to educate parents about like, hey, this is when you take your holiday if you want to take one, because we want you to be a kid and enjoy yourself. It's like, you never really get there and then you feel like you're behind the ball middle of summer or something like that. So yeah. I think that's a very important thing to mention, and I appreciate you said that. And I think the next one that I have is something that I stole because I knew it was important, and I think we both religiously are that important of a structure for it, is the time in the off season is the only time in my period that you can get significantly stronger. I think that physical prep, there's no problem someone has come to me at the end of season with, whether it was like culture, flexibility, injuries, scores, cardio. There's not a single problem that I've ever worked on with a team or consulted on that didn't have some solution in physical prep. You know, like, because physical prep can mean basics and body lines and just going back to kind of like fundamentals. That can mean better accessory work for your ankles and your Achilles so that next year your ankles don't fall apart. That can mean, you know, all sorts of stuff. So I think that the 2 months in particular, when you come back from that 3 week or 2 week kind of like downshift, you have very limited time actually to get like substantially stronger legs or core or body. So I feel as though a full in-depth, robust strength conditioning program that is blended between, you know, general preparation with weight training and into general specific pressure stuff that you have offered with Daily Dozen and gymnastic stuff. I personally find that like this 8 weeks, maybe you have, there's only one time to do it. And I think that it comes up then. So I'd love to hear your thoughts first, because this is obviously something I've learned a lot from you on.
Well, I mean, I agree completely, entirely, that you've got to use those windows of opportunity to work on strength. They are few and far between in the pure sense. I mean, we recognize that we can work on external load and producing force and things throughout the entirety of the year. But when we're looking at that window of opportunity to exponentially expose the athlete, I guess, to those high forces and really push them through strength, yeah, that window is smaller, because you just don't want to be doing that whilst they're being exposed to the load or the volume and the intensity of actually doing routines and doing hard landings and all of that. So yeah, that's absolutely key. And it kind of sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? Because we say, well, we're going to go on a rest, but then hang on a minute, like, now we're ramping up the physical, but that is what needs to take place. And like, the whole season and the success and the robustness of the athlete will be built on whether or not we've done a good enough job at developing that foundation of strength as well. Now, one thing I want to add, which does link back to the previous point about taking time off, because I wholly agree, after a competition finishes is the ideal time, of course, because you're the furthest point away from the next season, to take time off. What I would discourage people doing, though, is literally going away the next day. And I often find this, that clubs or parents might assume that as soon as the competition's done, let's say that that's on a Sunday, that Monday's the best time to travel and to go away. And as I mentioned earlier, any changes both up and down need to happen gradually. So I'm pretty sure there'll be a lot of coaches listening to this that recognize that when they go on vacation, they get sick straight away. So their body kind of like, all of a sudden the stress and the intensity of life just stops. And now they're sitting by a beach in Mexico, sipping mojitos, and like everything's changed and their body just, you know, they get sick straight away. Now this can happen quite easily with our athletes. And so actually that recovery week or that vacation time is now spent with illness. And so it's an important factor that to taper off as well as taper up to prevent injury and illness taking place in the first place. So I just wanted to add that in there, because I think it's an important point, and it's something that I've certainly learned working within the kind of the high performance community, that they've always recommended science and medicine teams that you allow a good few days of lower intensity training to kind of gradually bring the body down. Okay. But back to your point, strength training, using that block, completely agree.
No, I like that. Well, first I'd like to say is that There's an error and a myth that still propagates the culture, which is that the time off is what causes problems. And that's not true. It's your point, which is it's the lack of ramp up and ramp down. Like that's clearly noted in a lot of research. So people come back on a Monday after a holiday or a 3-day or a 4-day week. And they're like, all right, you should be fresh. We're going to crush you. Right. And they go so hard on Monday that like by the next week in the delay, people's shins and back hurt. And like, oh yeah, it's because you took that week off. It's like, well, that is like the most false thing I've ever seen in my life. So that's it. Two is that, do you think they put basil in their mojitos? That was also something I was going to ask. But the third point is that I'll just summarize this. I know people want
a joke that no one's going to understand, Dave.
That's why I'm running right by it, baby. If you're a longtime podcast listener and you understand that joke, I need to send you like a t-shirt because that is a hidden gem of like last 2 years. Okay. So I know people want practical, like nitty gritty things. And so I believe, and I think you share this with me, is that it doesn't matter whether you're in the gym 1 day per week or 6 times a week with doing 2-a-days on a national team, 33% of all of your time in the gym should be physical prep in some way, shape, or form. I feel like that's basics, flexibility, whatever you want to call that. A third of your time should be on physical prep. For a rec class, that's like the warm up and some conditioning at the end, right, of an hour. But and then within that too, if we're talking about a competitive program that's kind of got more high level goals, I think that within the off season block, half of that time should be between general training, where you use cross training, weight training, dumbbells, barbells, whatever, kind of GPP, we call that, general physical preparation. And 50% of your time should be gymnastics specific training, whether it's every day in a warm up you're doing Nick's Daily Dozen, or you're doing circuits that are just gymnastics a couple of days a week. I have some programs that are only 2 days a week and they do the same exact thing. One day is one day is the other, and they have their warm up and strength conditioning inside there. And I think that that should be like not a rule, but a very close guideline you follow. And I think that everything I've ever studied from the science of gymnastics and sports performance and in this and others says that the combination of general training and specific training in the off season, when properly done, is the best way to get explosive body weight power, which is what everybody wants. And it's the best way to get anaerobic conditioning for a floor routine or a bar routine or a ring routine. So I know people want some like hardcore things to kind of like jot down and bring to their next meeting. And that's my guide. That's what I tell the people I consult with. And that's the same thing I would tell somebody right in front of me.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is that what we tend to see is when the athletes are younger, their preparation is almost entirely gymnastic specific. So you've referenced the Daily Dozen a few times. And for those that are unfamiliar, it's a baseline program, which has got your cast handstands in, your rope climbs, your presses. It's all of that kind of content. And so that is almost the entirety of our young athletes' physical prep. And of course, as they mature, we integrate a hybrid model, of course. So we've got now the introduction of external load and true strength training as opposed to body weight strength training. Now, what I see when I'm working with some of the, you know, really high level athletes is that the ratio is completely flipped. They're actually only doing about 15% of gymnastic specific preparation, and they're getting the rest of their physical prep entirely from strength and conditioning. That doesn't necessarily mean it's like really like high level strength stuff. It could be power training, like rate of force development, for example, but it's done in a fitness gym. It's done with a strength and conditioning coach. And actually you hardly see them do any gymnastics preparation back in the gym because what happens is their gymnastics takes care of that anyway. When they're working at that level, doing a bar routine is physical prep. Like they don't need to necessarily do a rope climb or a set of press to handstands when they're doing so many cast to handstands in routines and high level skills. So for the listeners, just to be really clear on this, I am referencing high level athletes with high level programs here, not your kind of mid level athletes. They'll still need probably a lot more specific gymnastics preparation. But I think it's an interesting point that ratio really does swap around with the modern day high level performer, at least with many of the athletes that I've worked with anyway, not everybody.
Yeah, no. And my kind of, just to put a bow on this before we move on, is I think I get pinned as the person who wants every gymnast to lift all the time, right? Which is not true. I'm actually right more in the middle. But if you're under the age of 10, I would say maybe even like 11, like I'm actually probably 80% of your time should be on gymnastics specific preparation, because shaping and basics and skills and drills like that is like the foundation of your entire career. And then vice versa, when someone gets to university or college and they've done, you know, 12 years of elite, and then they did a bunch of other things on top of that, and like they've never weight trained ever before, I want them to spend more time in the weight training gym with really good seasoned strength coaches, because like a small drop in that bucket makes an exponential return. Just learning how to properly deadlift and load for 6 to 8 weeks sometimes makes a massive improvement in their power. So yeah, it's very context specific, I think, is probably the summary there.
Absolutely.
In the essence of making sure we get through all these, so we have reviewing the season. We have making sure we have time for play. We have strength conditioning robustly. And then what's your second one here? So make a number four.
Yeah, I think I blended a couple of mine last time. So I've shot myself in the foot slightly here. it was about not rushing goal setting. And I did touch on that. When I say don't rush, I'm not saying that you put this off for weeks and weeks and weeks, but I'm saying like, don't be too quick and too eager to start throwing goals at your athletes and like even your coaching team, because you just want them to be able to walk into the gym with that unpredictability and that that kind of sense of energy of like, oh, what are we going to be doing today? And so I think having a bit of a delay there is going to be important. Now you're smiling for some reason, Dave, so what have I said?
No, it's me. Because in my mind, I'm laughing at myself as a younger coach who just made this biggest error. And I see this now. It's like, it's literally like the night or the awards after the meet of regionals or nationals. And like someone gets a medal or they do really, really well. And what's the first thing that I would say? Like, yeah, like wait till you get that double on floor. Like that'll be so great. We can move up. We can work like level 9 skills now. I'm laughing at myself being a dingo or a Muppet, as you would call me. Like I think back to my younger coaching years.
We've all been there, right? We've all done it. And it comes from great intent, and we're taught to goal set, and we're taught to be very task focused and oriented. So it's not a problem. It's just about understanding that like not everyone wants that every day. Like sometimes you should go a bit rogue off your training programs. Like it's good for the kids to come in thinking they're going to have a heavy session and just saying, you know what, we're going off program today. Like that just can bring a great sense of energy. And it's just, I guess it's about experience and knowing like when you should pull that lever and when you shouldn't, because there'll be a lot of coaches listening that don't have anywhere near enough structure as it is. And they need the opposite. They need to be more goal focused and task oriented and to bring a level of structure so that you have more purposeful practice. But there'll be other coaches listening that are so regimented and militant about what they're doing that they need to do the opposite, which is that you're actually going to get more out your kids by reducing structure and allowing a bit more freedom and autonomy. Always context specific, like everything that we've discussed is, but I think that's probably like another little nugget that I'd like people to take away. Allow a bit of time where you don't have that set out.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm trying to like think back and be empathetic to the athlete, right? They just grinded for eight weeks straight to really get prepped, to really peak. And then they got to the meet, they got super stressed. They hit their routines, are so excited. And the first thing they hear from a well-intentioned parent or coach is like, yeah, like can't wait for you to get these new skills and move up next year. Like they're like, oh my God, like Jesus, like let me just have my weekend, you know? So error on my side. But all right, so let's try to get through these. So that is very good. Yeah, we kind of hit that one before, but the last one that I have that I think is really overlooked sometimes. I would say there's errors on both sides. Some people are too paranoid, people are not, is you have to really think in advance of the next year and work your way all the way backwards to what you're going to be doing in broken down. Probably month is the best way to do it. So that is essentially periodization, is like planning and fluctuating load up and down. But for the well-seasoned coach, it's just having a really good idea of what's coming down the pike. And I think the way you do this is you start from the next year's most intense competition or what you want to peak for. You work your way back into 3-month chunks of the season, and then you break those down into individual months and weeks. And I find that in most places that I work with, college, university, or maybe club level too, is like season gets done. Kids are still in school. They're busy with academics. And so like they kind of have that 2-week or 3-week break, which is great. And then all of a sudden, like kind of just like all muddles together to like not really having a plan. We're kind of working new skills. We're kind of doing our physical prep. And then a month goes by. We get the holiday of 4th of July here in America. So like then people are gone a little bit for that. And then you look up and you're in August and you're 2 months into the off season. And you only have one more month to get ready. And people start to panic. They start to panic about like what they should do. They start throwing a lot of routines. They start throwing a lot of drills and stuff for the kids, and people break down a bit. And so I think for us, we've talked a lot about how these things only work if they're set in specific slots of the off season for like, okay, we have 2 weeks where we're going to really pull back quite a bit, maybe do a lot of these kind of unstructured play. But then 2 weeks, we're going to ramp up slowly for our strength program. We have a full 4-month block of really hard strength and physical prep and drills. And then we're going to pull back for a week. Then we're going to push for another month. Like that level of detail is really important. And the only thing I want to offer before I hear your thoughts is like the reason you need to do this is because everyone needs to be prepared. Parents, coaches, athletes, they need to know what the next 8 weeks looks like so they can strategically put their effort into these few weeks and then know that I have a break coming down the road. Parents can take their holiday, kids can have birthday parties or whatever they want to do. If you don't educate them and give them a plan in advance of the next 12 weeks loosely, I think what happens is sometimes they just like feel really, really overwhelmed all the time and they just feel like they're constantly running uphill nonstop. So really sitting down in those meetings and planning, what does the next 3 months look like? And what are we going to do within those 3 months? And then what does preseason look like? How are we going to transfer over to routine mode? Like really far in advance, you have to know this and communicate this to the athletes.
Yep. Yeah, I think reverse engineering it is important, like you said. So working backwards, what usually happens is you work backwards and then you realize you really don't have much time to be like, like relaxing. Yeah, I mean, like your competitive season in the States is slightly different than what happens here. But, you know, like we compete again, like where there's kind of two periods, really. It's the spring and then the autumn. And so for most athletes, if they're going to go away on their family vacation, by the time they get back, there's very little time between them and then their kind of first competition. So it's always a bit awkward, really. And then when you take into fact like that into consideration and you work back in your blocks and your months and things, you do like, geez, we've only actually got like a few weeks before we need to be goal orientated again. And that is a good thing to do, like to realize that. And also remember that's where the stress comes as well, which is why it's, as I've mentioned already, so important to capitalize on the small window of opportunity that you do have to take your foot off the gas, because that window of opportunity will go very, very quickly. So I absolutely agree in reverse engineering that process. Now, I'm always asked this: how many weeks of competition preparation do I need to do? So how many routines, how many numbers, when do I start? And it's way too context specific to ever answer that, because it depends on how healthy and fit is the athlete, how competent are they, you know, how prepared are they for the routines they're going to be doing, how many days do they train, etc. But what I would encourage coaches to do, and we've talked about this really, it's the process of plan, do, review. So if they've just done a competition season or a block, and none of the athletes were ready in time, then the answers are there. You've just got to go, well, we need to get them ready earlier. So we only did 6 weeks of preparation. Now it needs to be eight. Let's give eight a go and see if that works for us, as you know, this time around. Maybe eight becomes the sweet spot that you then replicate with that crop of athletes. And there'll be some athletes, of course, that need more time or less, but you've got to learn from what you do. And that's the best way of ever getting to the answers that you're looking for. It's not to ask someone else who's, you know, so there's someone that you might ask who's only coaching five athletes, got a huge gym, their athletes are training twice a day, the ratios of coach to athlete are amazing, the kids don't go on vacation in the summer because you don't let them. You can't compare that to your own circumstances where you've got 20 kids, a busy gym, you're training three times a week instead of twice a day. Like, you've got to learn from your own program and like going through the process, interrogating it and analyzing it, and then going, cool, now these are the changes we're going to make next time, and let's just find that sweet spot. And it really shouldn't take many seasons for you to work out how long do we need to prepare these athletes for a comp.
Yep. Yeah, no, I love it. And I think the takeaway for people for me in like granular stuff here is like, write it down, have a plan, and have it on paper somewhere. We're going to follow this for a month to review and go back and forth. And don't err on the side of being too rigid or too loose. I think by the error on too rigid is people make a plan, they write it down, they never sway. They say, we're doing this many routines, we're doing this many strength, this is what the assignment is, like, you have to do it. And that leads to a lot of problems with individuality. But then the other side of the program is people who are too loose. They don't really ever write things down. They kind of like, let's do some rope climbs, let's try some handstands, let's try this drill I saw on Instagram. Like, and they find like they're just floating in the ether and it never really has a concrete structure to it. So I would say just be careful on either sides of those. Those both can kind of get you in hot water. But let's wrap it up here. Let's give you the opportunity to kind of share your last one, and then we'll kind of tie it all together.
Yeah, I'm kind of linking in, but it's you know, the importance of celebrating previous wins and successes with the athletes, because by switching to a like let's look forwards mode, we, you know, kind of rob the athlete of what they might have accomplished and succeeded moving backwards. So you said before, you know, and I've been this guy as well, but like the competition finishes, you get really excited and you go, cool, wait till you do this, and like, now we're going to start doing this. And and actually you just need to take a minute and pause sometimes and go, good job, you know, like, well done, I'm proud of you for this, or this was fantastic. And like, let's just sit with that and stay with it without saying, well done, but, or you did a good job on this, but. And like, I've done that loads, like we probably all have, and it's just having that moment, like, celebrate the success and then say nothing else. Just like, let the athletes enjoy what they have done and achieved and accomplished. And by the way, if they haven't got something to enjoy, maybe they're feeling really bad about their performances and like nothing came to plan, like, then they need a bit of time to kind of get like, come to terms with that. And they need the support as well before you even start to think about the next period, because they're just going to freak out. Like, well, I didn't even manage this. Like, now you want me to do that? So we've just got to be, I guess, empathetic about that. So I apologize that probably all of my things have kind of like linked in probably too closely, but I'm quite passionate about that. And I'm passionate about the items that you've shared, you know, the importance of structure, planning, reflection, you know, all of that. I think it's crucial, absolutely vital. So.
Yeah, absolute gems, man. I appreciate you sharing all your expertise. And I think between the two of us, we have a pretty good set of, you know, experiences, knowledges, working with people for common problems. So just a review for people that have them. So you need to have a pretty good in-depth review of the season. You need to make sure the athletes have time to play and kind of enjoy the training process. Again, not so structured, not so hardcore with routines. Be very diligent about your strength, conditioning, and your physical prep program. You need to make sure that you have not rushing your goal setting and throwing too much at the athlete right away for planning for the next year as soon as one stops. And then really make sure that we have an in-depth approach to what we're going to do each month all the way through the next year. And then lastly, trying to make sure that we're not doing... What did you say? Sorry, last one. I can't read my own handwriting.
Just celebrating success, really.
Yeah. Right. Sorry. The C's, man. The C's in my handwriting really get me sometimes. Yeah, I think that's pretty good to kind of chew on. And I think most people are going to be looking for some more in-depth kind of things here. So I know you have wonderful mentorship programs, online stuff, GymCon stuff. Can you tell people about where they can find any information from you?
Thank you, Dave. Yeah, I mean, the best place is my website, nickruddock.com. On Instagram as well, I'm pretty active there. So if people are looking for, you know, ongoing support and mentorship, then the Gymnastics Growth Academy would be the program to look for. But nickruddock.com, they'll be able to find all my events and activities and podcasts and stuff there as well.
Fantastic, man. Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming on and giving me your brain again, as usual.
Yeah, no, great. Thanks for inviting me back on. And yeah, it's been fun. Hope the listeners got something from it.
Cheers, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Speak soon.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to that episode. I hope that you really enjoyed it and got a lot of value out of it. I just want to let you know before we sign off here that a couple things we'd love you to do. So one is please just make sure that you rate and review the podcast on iTunes or Spotify or Stitcher, wherever you're listening, because that really does help the episode grow quite a bit. And then second, if you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you left us a review as well and told us what you liked about it. You know, what information was useful, what things were not useful, would you like to know more about, what guests you want to have on in the future. And then also as you kind of go about your day, if you found something really useful, just toss it up on social media. We love to hear from people on Instagram or Twitter or, you know, all the different websites that they're using for social media. Facebook is great too. But yeah, let us know what you like, because honestly, the podcast comes from people who just tell us what they're finding useful. And that's how we create the next set of content. So yeah, tag us in the podcast or tag us online, whatever you're doing, and let us know what you think. Thanks.